for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's episode 145 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Did you pick up Black Market number 3 this week when you went to the comic store? I hope you did, because this week's interview is with Frank Barbieri, the creator of that great book and other books, including Five Ghosts, White Suits, and Solar Man of the Atom. We talk about how this excellent Boom Studios comic came to be. We delve into his other projects as well. What's really interesting is Solar Man of the Atom, which some folks want to call Woman of the Atom, because there's a new character in there. He talks about how he got into comics with Five Ghosts and what it's like to work for multiple companies at the same time. So I'm sure you're going to want to hear what he has to say. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. I want to welcome to the podcast Frank J. Barbieri, creator of Black Market from Boom Studios and many other good things too, including Five Ghosts and some other good stuff that we'll talk about a little bit. How are you doing today, Frank?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's good to talk with you. Why don't we jump right into Black Market and talk about this? It's doing pretty well. There's a lot of people who really love it. The bookstore that I go to, they have it prominently displayed up there so people can actually get a good chance to pick it up and buy it.
So good to hear on my end.
So why don't you talk a little bit about how Black Market came to be? How did you come up with the concept and how did it happen?
So Black Market is actually pretty interesting, as it is one of the, quote, pitches I had. So just like a concept ready to go way before I actually broke into comics. I'd say almost like 3 years old, 3 years old from like this year, which doesn't sound so long, but again, when stuff moves so fast, I mean, I really say like it was with the publication of Five Ghosts that things kind of start off, which was only March 2013. So I've had a really great opportunity to bring a lot of stuff I was sitting on, including White Suits was another book that actually predates Five Ghosts being published that I ended up being able to do as well. But Black Market was a book that I was really passionate about. I had tried to start out and was kind of like workshopping with a buddy of mine early on. We just go hang out and talk about it. And really, it was born of a love of Breaking Bad, quite obviously. I feel like that's been a great touchstone for many of us who kind of love anti-heroes. And anti-heroes in a sense that they're not necessarily like vigilantes or anything like that, but good men who are forced to do bad things. So again, we get a lot of that, like I think about Dexter as well, who's not necessarily forced, but it's just a circumstance. And I know that's a lot of TV influence, but it's certainly came about when I was thinking like, oh, well, I really love crime. I like Breaking Bad a lot, but how would this work better in a comic? Like, what could make this uniquely a comic and not just Breaking Bad? And it's funny, when I initially was talking about it, like, Ray had like a sick son and things like that. And it was just kind of too close. Like, the motivation was all the same. And as a writer, I mean, you want to take things you like and produce something new. So I really kind of ended up putting it on the back burner. But I had the main nugget of what if a man had to steal blood and organs, as it turns, from superheroes. So effectively, he would have to kill or really hurt and operate outside of the law to these kind of big figures in society. Like, that, like, irony I really fell in love with and thought really had a story there. Like, what if it was necessarily a good man, but he just made this discovery and he knew, like, in his heart, he could save the world, so to speak, if he did this one bad thing. Like, what would that lead to? Like, who would he be? Like, would the government know? And a lot of those questions were popping up. I was really, really excited about it, but I just, like, could not get it together. Like, I had a few artists who I was trying to work with who were great, but you just kind of know. Comics is one of those things, once you start making them, like, it either happens or it doesn't, and it just wasn't happening. And So fast forward to last year at San Diego Comic-Con, I met with who became my editor, Eric Harburn, and I think Matt Gagnon was there too, but Eric had really liked what I was doing at Five Ghosts, and I think he had seen some of the White Suit shorts as well, and just asked me to have lunch, and we got talking. He told me a lot about Boom and what they were doing, and I've been a fan of their publisher, and they've really made a huge, huge push to bring new original content in. As a writer who very much believes in doing my own stuff, it was exciting to be able to talk to someone who was also excited about that and who had a publishing infrastructure where they're putting money like straight into developing new stuff, not telling you what to do, not trying to give you like stuff to reboot. And they said, hey, if you have anything you want to kind of throw to us, like that you'd like to develop and work on, let me know. And I sent them over the kind of a very rough sketch of what I was thinking with Black Market, and which initially at the time we were calling Cruel Science, or at least I was calling Cruel Science. I sent them like a very basic paragraph over to Eric, like what if a man who's a scientist discovered a cure for cancer in the blood of superheroes and had to hunt down superheroes. And Eric really loved that and saw the potential. And from there, we took it completely back to the square one and kind of rebuilt it from there. And over the term of the year, we worked and worked and revised. And then I guess around, oh gosh, very recently, maybe around January, he signed Victor onto the project after we had written almost two issues, which was amazing as I love Victor. And anyone who's seen the book just sees the beautiful work he's done along with colorist Adam Metcalf. And we were just kind of off to the races. And I love working with Boom because I work with two editors, Eric Harburn and Chris Rosa, and we're really collaborative in a sense of story editing. So like we'll get on the phone and discuss where things go, like what's sounding good, like how it's working. It's a really nice way to work and have a great sounding board. Mm-hmm. And there's often a lot of confusion as what editors really do. Mm-hmm. And I've been fortunate enough that most of the editors I work with are really kind of story editors. Like they're not going to get in there and rewrite your script. You're going to discuss with them. They're going to make suggestions. You're going to go back and forth. And when it comes time to write, you have all that with you. And it's so nice because it's the exact opposite of what I do on Five Ghosts. And Five Ghosts is completely done alone. Like it's me, Chris Mooneyham, and Lauren Affey. Like mm-hmm. me, the artist and the colorist who work on that book. And here it's really nice to approach it from a kind of more collaborative way. And again, so Eric and Chris have been amazing and really pushed me and helped me get a story into shape that I'm super proud of. And I feel like fits very nicely within four issues. And that's a very different approach I took to this than White Suits, because again, White Suits predated Five Ghosts in development. And I really kind of started put together when, quite frankly, I was a worse writer. I was like 24 years old when I put that together in an outline. And I rewrote a lot of it last year. I'm 29 now and just had to kind of retcon almost a lot of what I had in the initial pitch. And it was so nice to come into this knowing that it was only going to be four issues, that here's how we can economically use this space and tell the story we'll tell. And I'm rambling a bit now, but basically that's how things came about. Eric approached me and liked it, and we've just been working, and Boom really believed in it. And I'm so thrilled with how it came out. As I said, I think the book looks better than I could have ever expected. Victor and Adam are doing such tremendous work, and I honestly feel it's one of the best things I've ever written. I'm really excited for people to be able to see all four issues, as it's actually all done already. We got really ahead of it. Victor is tremendously fast, which is really helpful. And I think there's a lot of surprises still coming. Structurally, we did a really interesting thing where the book in and of itself covers a pretty wide timeline. I'd say there's almost like a three-year gap we're looking at, where there was stuff initially happening that's very important to our story versus just focusing in on one linear moment. So we do jump around a lot, which I know it can confuse some people, but it was all very meticulously planned. And in the scheme of it, I think it reads really well once you can see the whole picture. Because in issue two, we made a very deliberate choice that the events in issue two, a lot of them happened before the events in issue one. Because we really wanted to jump in. And anyone listening, I'm sorry, I'm assuming you've read it. If you haven't, sorry for the minor spoilers. I won't get too plot heavy, but we really want to get that ambulance scene in issue one where they have the kind of fire superhero in the back of the ambulance, because that was a really cool visual space. We want to see our characters capturing a hero and kind of taking his blood. And we see that as well in issue two. But for me, issue two is very much about, we echo a lot of the circumstances, like with the brother arriving at the door. We're actually seeing something before that and getting a little bit of a snapshot of how Ray was before he was kind of in the thick of this. And I don't know, for me, I thought it was really important to step back and to get to know the character a little well. And I'm always very interested with how people respond to things. I saw a few readers being like, well, reviewers being like, oh, like this retreads the same ground as the first issue. And I'm like, yeah, but it's about bringing a different lens almost to it, just showing how Ray has kind of become hardened over time and that he's still ignorant of exactly what he's doing. But again, I look forward to them seeing issues 3 and 4 where stuff really takes a turn, and it's important that we spend this time building them up, because clearly we're going to start knocking stuff down as we only have 4 issues. So we've hit that midpoint, and we ended on another cliffhanger that I think is an exciting way to turn into issue 3 and 4. Like, we're just wrapping up the odds and ends, and I'm really, really proud of how it ends, and think that this is a book that we planned really well, in a sense that after you read the ending, you could really kind of go back and re-examine a lot of stuff and see stuff we have planted.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great, because a deep book like this is a good one to read. You know, a lot of comics tend to be superficial in nature. You know, you're trying to watch things as they go by, but there's really not a lot of depth to what's happening. But one of the things about Black Market I think that's great is the fact that there is a lot of depth to the characters and a lot of depth to the story. And I didn't mind the second issue sort of going over ground, because there were gaps that were being filled in that I thought you guys were doing that made it all the better.
Oh, actually, well, that was the intent, so I'm glad to hear that. I mean, it's so hard because it's such a balancing act, and that's why I say I was so happy to approach this with 4 issues really in mind. Like, we knew exactly how much room we had, and this is maybe the most, like, meticulously planned book I've ever done, and quite frankly, it made me a better writer for doing that, as now I know how to use that space. I mean, I've got 2 arcs of 5 Ghosts Behind Me, a bunch of Solar White Suits, which I really loved, and I feel like Toby Cypress brought so much too, but on my part, I could have planned better. It kind of just happened so fast, it was so chaotic. I brought a lot of that to this project and said, I love this concept, I love this world, how can we get a really tight story that pays off in 4, and I'm really proud of what we've done. So I'm glad that that it works for you, long story short, because it works for me, and it worked for my editors, so I'm happy, and I do think it's something that will be rewarding to read through when it's all together again. But also, I always try to be very aware. I mean, we write for trade, like writers in general now, but I feel like each unit of the story does have a satisfying, like, kind of issue read. And I'm always trying to focus on the pacing for that, because I don't want people to feel like it necessarily, like, goes by too quick or anything like that, because, again, your time as a reader to me is not.
Well, that's the best kind of writing, and I see it on television all the time. When you get to something happens, and you go, oh, that meant this back at that point, because you didn't understand what all the stuff was going on until you see where your people are headed. And that's the kind of stuff I like. So for me, the second issue was not a problem at all. So I'm kind of surprised to hear that people didn't like that, but well.
Yeah. And again, I don't mean to immediately like react to criticism. I just thought it was interesting, because I just went back and reread it after that. I'm like, you know what? It does take us back, but it's very deliberate stuff. And it's one thing that I'm so often like interested when I comment and things like that. Because again, I very much not like have a thick skin with that, but I'm still so interested in how work's being perceived, because I still learn, like, oh, well, when I do this, like, people react this way. When I do this, people react a different way. And to me, that's really important. I mean, as writing goes, I write for myself, but it's a commercial product. I want to know what works and what doesn't. But I don't know. Sometimes I joke, like, it's always difficult for someone to review one piece of something, which I never quite understood. It's like, oh, I'm going to watch, like, the second act of a film and then write a review without knowing how anything pays off. And again, people got to do that. It's how it works. But there's definitely a lot of stuff here, something where we have it so deliberate that as we fill in those timeline gaps in, like I said, issue 4, like, I'm super proud of. And in issue 4, we see events that kind of have been happening in the background throughout the whole narrative that really bring a brand new perspective to everything.
Okay. Well, it sounds good. Now, I was reading an interview that you did with a site called Unleash the Fanboy, and there was a lot of stuff in there that kind of explained a couple of things to me. And there is one quote that you made that I thought was really something that I'd love for you to expound on, and that was where you referred to superheroes as the ultimate 1%. That was a great way to describe it. Do you want to explain what you meant by that?
Oh, absolutely. And that's really almost one of our controlling ideas for the book that emerged. And as I said, when I thought of this concept, and really the idea of someone having to kind of hurt superheroes in order to get this greater good, I was like, well, what if, to put it bluntly, the superheroes in our world were kind of like dicks? Like, they were not people who just kind of stepped up and were doing the right thing. They're these thieves that no one knows where they came from. Like, they're better than us in every way. I mean, they're better looking, they're stronger. They are these kind of super entities that stand outside humanity. And that really kind of changed the tone of the book for me a little bit. And we'll see more and more of the superheroes. And they're not bad by any means. I mean, they're superheroes. They're saving the day and fighting crime, so to speak. But they're really a complete foil to the heroes we have, the kind of working class heroes who are our golden age in Black Market. These are people with actual superheroes who are practically gods who literally stand above society. And it got me thinking a lot of, and by no means is the book a really like a super gritty real world take on superheroes, but if superheroes did appear, people would be pretty freaked out. Like, not everyone would be excited about that. If there was suddenly a guy who can melt you with his vision or punch a hole through you, you have to think of, and a lot of writers have done this, by no means did I invent that take, but even opening Black Market 2, like, we have a superhero stop the bank robber by punching a hole through him, and while in the moment that seems like a great way to solve a problem, it's against the law. It's a deplorable act in a lot of ways as well, and I think approaching them as being almost like, again, a 1%, just something that all of humanity sits outside and can aspire to, but will never quite get there, like, does bring a big separation. And including to mirror the economy a little bit, like, and then when we changed the name to Black Market and we saw the underlines of this really kind of like, oh, well, we have people trying to steal from them to kind of balance things out. It really just became a really nice, like, metaphor that we never want to push on in the book, but if I get a chance to talk about it, definitely is something that's really buried there that we're happy with and really serves as a nice controlling idea for us.
I was interested, too, that you mentioned the fact that you didn't want to write a book about superheroes unless you could add something to the whole superhero genre. Because, you know, let's face it, superheroes are endless. You know, you get, you buy, I love Batman and I buy it every month, but, you know, you've got to go back and reset it so that somebody else can pick it up. What you're doing with your book is you're introducing some new aspect to it, the notion that there is, that superheroes may do better good if they're not alive than if they are, which is kind of an interesting way to look at it. And I thought that was a really interesting addition to the whole notion of the superhero that you guys had put into it.
Thank you so much. And I always jock that Bendis quote because Powers is one of my favorite books. And I always read comics, but I wasn't so serious about it during like my middle school years. But when I got into high school, that's when Powers just started coming out and I discovered really Image for the first time. I mean, I'd like read Spawn in passing when I was a kid, but like I never really paid attention to, like, oh, this is like original IP from an artist that never dawned. But Powers is really the book that brought me in. And Bendis would always say, like, it's almost pointless to try to add to the superhero canon or create your own book unless you have a true take on it. And now, not just to name drop writers I like, but I was just listening to Ed Brubaker speak about the Fade Out coming out. He was talking about superheroes and saying superheroes aren't even really a genre, they're a trope. And I think that's a really good point. So I'd argue that Black Market is almost more of like a crime drama with superheroes in it, that we explore a lot of those tropes and maybe not subvert them or dig too deeply in, but definitely are aware of what's there, what people expect, what people know. And for me, that was really important, to find the take that wasn't just like, oh, a story about a superhero who's super strong and can save the day. Anybody will want to write that story, by the way. Like, I mean, when you get into trying to make comics, everyone's first ideas are always like superhero books. I mean, I always joke the first thing I ever thought of back when I was like 19, I'm like, oh, wait, you can like make comics. I tried to write this comic that was just blatantly like a crappy X-Men. And I was like, and I mean, quickly you run into the wall with that. You realize like, oh, well, when that was invented, like there was something really special about that idea and those characters that spoke. And I think it's really just maturing a bit as a writer and finding the separation between like just like plot and what you want work to say. And Black Market, I definitely came in with a plot first, but then thought about and through a lot of discussion with my editorial, like, what do I really want this book to be about? Like, what do I want it to say? And how does that color my view on superheroes, on politics, on morality? And really a lot of the last chapter, too, we get a really nice look at, again, the age-old question of, like, if a man's, like, stealing an apple to feed his family, is it worth it? Does it make the man a criminal or does it make him a hero? And I think having superheroes in the story as almost what's supposed to be that ideal is a really nice echo to that, to be like, oh, well, this is what it's supposed to look like, but is that really the best thing?
Well, one of the things I noticed in your book as compared to other superhero books, we don't actually get to know the superheroes very well. They basically are
bodies that can be used to for a greater good. And that's very different from what I'm used to reading in superheroes. You know, Rey, who you described as the main character, as somebody who has a lot of restrained fury, and his brother Denny, those are the ones who are the most fleshed out. You know, we don't see the superhero very much, the different characters, who they are, what their motivations are a lot of the time. But we do see their motivations and the people around them a lot more. And if you were, honestly, in the real world, if there were superheroes, we wouldn't know these people and their motivations. We'd just see them in action. So in many ways, Black Market is one of the more realistic superhero comics that I've read.
Thank you. And I think that's something that really came to us naturally when we were putting the book together, where that's what makes it that, quote, realistic look. Because in a real world, we're telling a human story about people reacting to the existence of superheroes. And the way I always used to try to pitch it, because I never want to pitch the book as a superhero book, because especially as a new writer, that's poison. To try to be like, I want to do a superhero book. And everyone will be like, yeah, go get a job from Marvel or DC. But I was really keen on saying that superheroes' texture, like, they're there. Their background. And I think Bendis does that in an awesome job in Powers, where he's writing. I mean, they're a little more present. It's a little more about them. But still, like, that idea of it's a police procedural with superheroes. So that they're there texturing the world, and especially now, like post-films, more than a lot of the superhero films, was there where people get the idea of a superhero. Mm-hmm. You don't need to spend so much time setting that up, and that's what makes it fun to do books like this, which I'm not giving us too much credit when we're trying to read it, but I feel like we can subvert the genre a little bit because of that, because people know what's supposed to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I really love the idea of the superheroes, that almost people are very apprehensive about. Like, that scene in the apartment in number two, like, yeah, not everyone is thrilled to have them around. People are scared. They don't understand them, and they have freakish abilities. Like, there will be a school of people who will be excited by that because they stop crying, but also there's going to be so many questions in different views.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the things about your book, is it's a very smart book and a very literate book on that sense, is because we get to look at people and the situation through the human eyes and through how things could be made better by them in a way even they don't expect. And I found that to be a very, very smart way to look at it, and very interesting and something I'd never seen before. So I really like Black Market a lot. And I just think you guys are doing a terrific job on it.
Thank you so much. And like I said, it's a book that I was always passionate about because I knew there was something there, but I really give it to Boom for taking a chance, as anything with superheroes is very, very risky. And they were never shied away from that, never scared of it. And then also, just like I said, Victor has rendered it in such a beautiful way. I'm such a huge fan of his book, and he has such great storytelling and it's such great design work. We're going to see a really great character, number three, one of the kind of golden age superheroes called Tiger Bomb, who is a kind of also retired boxer who's friends with Bruiser, and Victor just did a beautiful scene with him. I mean, it's a pretty grisly scene, but he definitely got excited and brought us 80, and I'm so happy to be in touch with him and call him a friend, as I love his work so much. And you know, it's a real honor to have him on the book, and he, again, I can't emphasize enough, and everyone involved did such a good work. And it's funny because I usually letter my own stuff, but Ed Dukeshire lettered this and did such a better job. I would have, I'm like, oh, I think I realize I'm actually pretty crappy at lettering now. But Ed also did a wonderful job with that. And Victor definitely does really, really awesome layouts. And once I knew he was on the book and I could start writing to his strengths a little more, I think Ed did a really good job of bringing that all in, because this book was also new for me because I'm not really into writing captions so much. I mean, I started a lot more once I ventured out of Five Ghost territory, but I want the captions to do something, not just be glorified thought balloons. And they are actually a real-time, like, conversation happening, which is something we'll find out later on, not to spoil everything, but we'll see what the nature of these captions really is at the end.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned, of course, that this is a four-issue miniseries, but in your interview, you said that should there be enough interest that you could come back with more stories having to do with the situation and the characters.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something we discussed, and I mean, it won't be immediate, but it is something that we have thankfully stumbled out of worlds here, and we're really happy with everything we've done, and I won't speak to the ending so much, and it will definitely close out this chapter, but I don't know, it's a place we really like, and we all like working together, so hopefully we can muster something else up as a follow-up. And it's great because we have so much space to either go prequel or sequel, so to speak. You know, that's the best ground to be in, because once we find something that excites us, we can all move
Well, a good story will always lend itself to more stories.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? I feel like that's the difference for me, where concepts I want to pursue and concepts that don't. It's once the story gets going, it does have legs like that as a way to spring up. You know, we're super happy with reception. People dig it. And again, it's all I can ask for. I was just actually talking about this with one of my peers. I've been really kind of blessed to be able to do my own stuff this early on and have it not fail totally as a... We're in a really special time for the market right now, where new writers and artists can come out with original content and have it sell as well as it does. It's just kind of astounding to me, because it's the total opposite of the way it's always been. And there is a fear there, though. I was just, again, I apologize for that tangent, but I was just talking about it with my friend. But it's insane to me that I immediately entered the sphere of relevance, almost in a way, or at least the immediate, like, market with some of my favorite writers, and that's constantly horrifying as you look at, like, what Brian Boyle's doing with Saga, what, like, Remender's doing with his books, what Brubaker's doing. Mm-hmm. And then I step back and, like, Jesus, like, they're almost my peers at this point. Like, I need to really get moving. But, I mean, it's the equivalent of growing up in front of everybody, is what I say mm-hmm. now. Like, and I'm happy that people are starting to, like, seek out my work by name alone. That's really an honor, and I hope they continue to enjoy the new stuff coming out, because, and I'm really happy to be doing a lot of work for hire right now, like, and really kind of getting into some stuff at Marvel and DC, which has also been, quite frankly, a dream come true. But I am someone who always will value having my own stuff. I mean, Five Ghosts we are going to do as long as humanly possible, and the TV show stuff will hopefully help that a bit. But then I have a lot of new content that... I have two new books I'm hoping specifically to do at Image. We'll see where this goes. I mean, there's a lot of heavy lifting on my part with that, as I need to kind of really have them ready to go. But I'm excited to bring more there, continue Five Ghosts, and I have, again, a slew of new original content I want to bring out, hopefully in 2015. Jeez, I can't believe I have to say that already. Like, that mm-hmm. we're already thinking that far advanced. But again, I'm someone who likes doing my own stuff, and I'm very fortunate to be at a wealth of publishers right now and feel like I have a really solid base of options when it comes to doing books. And every publisher I've worked with is amazing and excited, and everyone has pros and cons. Like, a lot of people want to try to, like, dissect, like, oh, well, why would you do this book here or this book here? And it's really just finding an appropriate time and place. Like, for me, someone, like, again, I don't have the luxury of having an open door anywhere. I need to kind of make my case, and mm-hmm. there's a million decisions that goes into that. But everyone has been so kind and accommodating, and even when people have passed on stuff, like, just getting positive feedback and knowing that they're interested in what you're doing means a lot to me. So.
Well, the good thing for you right now is the fact that, like, you've been working at Image and Boom and Dark Horse and Dynamite and also Marvel. So, you
yeah,
know, if there's,
it's been a crazy year.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good for you, though, isn't it? If you have a concept, let's say, that Marvel doesn't care for, but Image will buy, you know, isn't that's a good thing for you, because you get to create the thing you want to do, just in a different place.
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of not being like a one-sided writer who, like, kind of tries to plant their flag in one place. And so important for me, being so new in the industry, like, again, there are some people who will discover different work in different ways, and maybe people who follow one publisher. And it always amazes me when I get, like, Twitter messages or anything like that, because you feel like once your work is out, it's like everyone who reads comics is going to see it. But, like, every day I get, like, oh, I just found Five Ghosts, like, at my store. I'm going to pick up the trades. Or, like, oh, I read your book on Boom, and now I'm looking at what else you've done. And it's a really good feeling to know that people are excited about your work because it's yours, not just because, oh, like, I love Batman, so now I'm going to read everything Batman, not care who's doing it. But I mean, that happens too. I mean, the Doctor Strange thing I did was really a great way to get out there. And I've actually done some DC stuff too that I forget that it's not out yet. But I did the Superboy Futures End issue with Ben Caldwell.
Oh.
And I'm actually really excited for that. Ben did a fantastic job, and it was really fun to do a Superboy story, like, kind of outside of continuity, so to speak. And it is actually Khan in our Superboy story too. Newsarama did a big thing about where he is and how he's going to end up. As Ben and I also did this Gen 13 prologue that was in Supergirl last month, that I can't really talk too much about that, but I guess that was actually my first published DC work, which is actually pretty funny. the two pages in Supergirl, but mm-hmm. there's some more stuff I've been doing with them, and they've been great. And it's really, like I said, an honor, and not to be too poetic about, but like romantic about, but like a dream come true to be able to write some of these characters. So I can't complain. and flexes so many different muscles in your brain, too, as a writer. It's great to be able to hop around from genres and characters and let that inform the writing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just trying to figure who you haven't written for at this point.
I think it's really just IDW and Oni.
Well, maybe if they're listening.
Which are both awesome companies. And I've talked to IDW a lot, and I really like a lot of their licenses and things like that. And they're great people, and Oni too. But again, we'll see. It's just all a matter of where things fit in the best. As I think everything, especially with the creator-owned publishers, everyone has very good brand right now and very good, like, I don't know. It just excites me to see so many publishers bringing new stuff out. Oni in particular has an awesome, awesome slate of books coming out this year. I'm so glad to see a lot of people they're doing books with, like, really taking off. Like, I really like Josh Ryalkov, and his books there have been great.
Bunker, and he did that other one recently that was about a guy that goes into a different space or time. Really good stuff. His stuff is always good, though.
He just his other book, The Life After, issue 2, came out today. That was fantastic. So.
Really good stuff.
He's super nice, too. Like, I've been fortunate enough to hang out with him a few times, and so, so kind, and so much good advice to give me. So,
I got to interview him, too, and talk about his work. And so he has a good way of doing things from a little different perspective, and that'll always help in today's thing. Now, I did want to talk with you briefly about Five Ghosts.
Oh, please, yes. Sorry to ramble.
that's okay. There's a couple of things that, in the last several weeks, I've been interviewing people who are making their own comics. And in the interview at Unleash the Fanball, you talked about the fact if you want to get into comics, the thing to do is get out and make comics. You were involved with Five Ghosts, and you got it going through Kickstarter, which a lot of the people I've talked to recently seem to be going through in order to get their books made. You get people to actually get in there and support it, and then once you've got the money to actually make it, then, you know, you make it and it gets people's attention when that happens. You talked about the fact that the way that to get into comics is to make comics, but going through Kickstarter and putting Five Ghosts, and now it's an Image and it's going, and you've got, what, issue 13 coming out in October?
Yes, yeah. It's I can't believe we have that many out already.
What's the basic premise of Five Ghosts? Because I have not had a chance to read that one yet.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, you got a lot you can get into if you want to. But it's about a treasure hunter in what we say is like an amorphous 30s period. So he's very much like Indiana Jones at his root. But the hook of the book is he's possessed by five ghosts that take the form of literary characters. So it's a ghost for Merlin, Musashi Miyamoto, Dracula, Robin Hood, and Sherlock Holmes, and you can channel each of their abilities.
Very cool. So it's 13 issues you've got going. Is it the story? How many storylines have you had in Five Ghosts so far?
We went through two and then had a standalone. So the first arc was five, and that's in the first volume. It's called The Haunting of Fabian Gray. Our main character's name is Fabian Gray. Not to be confused with Dorian Gray, which causes some people a double take. And then we did a standalone issue for issue 6, which actually our good friend Gary Brown did guest star on. And it's about Fabian kind of going to Japan, and we did a kind of like horror ninja story. That was very fun. And then the new arc we just wrapped up was called Lost Coastlines, which was big endeavor. It was a 6-part story that, again, went from issue 7 to 12. And the second trade just came out. It's called Lost Coastlines and has issues 6 through 12 in it. And we're really, really proud of it. And at this point, like I said, it was a book that both Chris and I and then our colorist Lauren Affey were all very new to the industry when we started working on it. And we've all done a ton of stuff now. And I guess Lauren was already doing some stuff at Dark Horse. But now we're at the point where we know what the book is so inherently and are so happy and like entrenched in it. Like, we're just so excited to do even better stuff with it. And we've always been happy, but it's really a book that taught us to kind of be comics professionals. So, And Chris, I absolutely adore how he draws. Like, I'm so lucky that I met him when we were both still, like, kids, so to speak. And literally, this was his first work, and hopefully it's a book we're going to do forever now. We both enjoy it, and I mean, he's my co-creator on it and collaborator, and it's our love letter to comics and everything we like about genre, and it's really the most fun we could have. And it's something that comes from a very pure place, because it's really just the three of us working on it. And we're the only ones to blame if people ever don't like it. And the big news we had coming out of Comic-Con was it's actually in development for television right now, which we're really excited about and came about in a really natural, organic way. Like, I mean, there's a lot of always weird interest when you put stuff out through Image, because, I mean, the television companies have figured it out that the creators own the rights. But the press release was at the bottom of a Warren Ellis press release, which is why we laugh, like, before Comic-Con. But the show has been pretty much fast-tracked. Like, honestly, as long as we don't hit a hurdle, like, it could be on TV next summer, which is insane to us. And we're kind of waiting for Network to come in. We've started having meetings on it, and it's just insane. It's something I never expected, and I keep my fingers crossed. The take we have, I'm so happy with, because I'm not writing the show. I'm involved in collaborating, but it's a completely true take to the comic. They didn't change the period or anything silly like that, so we're really happy that everyone at UCP, who is kind of our studio, is very excited. And the writer attached is Evan Darty. He wrote Snow White and the Huntsman, and I mean, had a big weekend. He wrote, was one of the writers on Ninja Turtles, and he's a guy who kind of really likes action, like genre, and likes literary, and was really excited by our take on that. And I'm just so happy to see so much of the book kind of make it in there. But yeah, no, it seems really cool. We're excited. They're talking to cool people and everyone's happy. And for me, being a comics person, I just, like, if we could get that spotlight on the book, even beyond just announcing it, that will just give us the infrastructure to do it as long as we want. And that would make me so happy.
Very cool. Well, I do want to touch on, you're talking a lot about your creations, your, you know, your creator-owned properties. But you're actually doing a book, and of course you talked about Doctor Strange too, but you're actually doing what I like to call Solar Woman of the Atom.
Yes, which has been such a amazing, fulfilling experience for me. I can't emphasize enough how happy I was. As that came about so quickly, like literally, I think issue 2 of 5 Ghosts was out, and Nick approached me about doing some stuff with Dynamite, and it happened to be Solar after we got together. But yeah, I feel so amazed that we had the ability to do whatever we wanted, and clearly we did. And writing that book is so fun to me because we have this world of Solar we can build off of, but it feels very much like writing my own book. Because we reinvented the character, and in Solar, in the same way I was saying, everyone kind of gets superheroes. Like, I was just rereading All-Star Superman, and it's subconsciously where I did it, but when Grant Morrison just does the origin of superhero in 4 panels, I mean, in no way am I comparing my book to All-Star Superman, but that's the same thing in the first issue of Solar. We see the origin of Dr. Solar in 4 panels. Like, we get it. Like, you understand. Scientist gets irradiated, gets superpowers. There we go. Let's move on. We don't need to spend days and days and issues and dredging over this. And for me, it was really giving us a new character, which is his daughter, Erica, who has an entirely different outlook on superpowers, on science, on her place in the world. And that was the story I was interested in telling. And it really kind of upped the ante by having her be a family member of Solar. And then we've also got her brother, Colin, and the big reveal at the end of issue 4 is that he also has the solar powers. So both of them have powers, and it's building towards a very purposeful place. And I just finished issue 6, and issue 4 has came out. Issue 5 should be out soon. But the next arc, which is loosely called Intergalactic, that's also the name of issue 5, but is about Erica and Phil kind of are lost in space after the events of issue 4. And we're going to kind of get a bunch of done-at-one stories about them in different planets and different places, kind of seeing things Phil has, for lack of a better term, just totally screwed up in the universe. As he said out loud, like, I went to space when I first got my powers and some bad stuff went down, and now we're seeing some of those exact repercussions, and also really exploring who Erica is as a character. I'm really proud of issue 6, and I feel like we get to really see Erica. Well, she has a new costume, first and foremost, like, cause we really want to differentiate her from normal Red Solar. She has an all-white costume that actually our cover artist Juan Doe designed, and it looks so great on the band. I'm so happy with it. And no more visor. She doesn't have the Cyclops visor. I was into getting that out. But she feels like a very new character. It's really nice that I feel like to put a lot of myself into that and give a very new viewpoint on what makes Solar Solar by having someone who isn't Phil Selesky anymore. And we still have Phil. He's still there. And he makes a great counterpoint. It's become very much a, like, almost buddy drama with her and her dad, where they have such different outlooks on what they're even doing. And again, he's sort of strange product. Like, they have not played together in years and years and years, and now suddenly they're bonded so close. It's definitely ripe for a lot of comedy and drama, so it's definitely become a lot more funny than I thought it would ever be, but it's very refreshing to me. I've enjoyed writing it so much, and we have a nice long run planned for it, which is great, so...
Very cool. Well, you're going to have to change the book to Solar Woman of the Atom at some point.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I don't know if we can because of the licensing. A lot of people send me on Twitter, like, other female readers, like, we're like, why don't you change it to Woman of the Atom? Like, I would, but I just literally don't know if we can. And to look into that, because Erica is not going anywhere. It's not like a stunt where we had her for like 4 issues. Like, she is the main character in the book. And Mm-hmm. Yes, we have Phil there, but it was really kind of important for me to have this new character. And it's funny because I had never read James Robinson's Starman. A lot of people were like, oh, that's a lot like Starman, and I've been reading it. It's so, so great. And now I know where not to tread and not do that. But that same mentality of someone who's really cannot be more different than the previous person in the mantle. And for us, it's fun because Erica is an artist. Her background was kind of punk rock girl who loved art and grew up to be an architect, which was her way of finding a real job, and hated her dad and hated science. And to see how she uses the powers, and this will really see in issue 6 for the first time, we get a big, big look at her method of problem solving and applying these, what are essentially science superpowers, in an artful way. And it's really a fun counter because we have Phil, who again will speak all the chemical equations and talk about, like, I am in issue 6. He's like, math is the one true language of the universe, and really kind of trying to sell his beliefs to her. And she's an adult. Like, she heard all this growing up, and she's just like, yeah, Dad, like, get out of my face. Like, that's not true. Like, and I'm going to show you and also show our readers, like, the hero is not defined by their powers. It's about who's behind the wheel. And I think that's really become a nice controlling point. And we'll have even more of that because now we reveal that Colin also has powers and has a very different agenda for America.
Well, I'm big on female lead characters because we don't have nearly enough of them. So I'm glad to see that you've got her in charge of Solar and going in a different direction. It's really kind of cool.
Yeah, no, it's really like, and again, I mean, I'm a huge advocate for just diversity in general, and there's almost a weird weight to that. Like, when we started planning it, like, I didn't want to feel exploitive or just like a publicity stunt, but really it helped so much in thinking about, like, how is her viewpoint so different from Phil? Like, not even gender, but just looking at that character as someone so completely different, and it really just helped us build someone who we could give such interesting, different sensibilities to. And I feel like for me, it was very important for it to not be, like, I didn't want her to be like Wonder Woman, like just like a bruiser, like super strong woman who's going to punch stuff because she can hang with the boys. Like, that was not ever anywhere. So we really want to see, like, examine who she was as a person and see how those sensibilities applied to her using the powers. And yeah, I think we've been very successful with that. And it's fun to think about. I mean, it's a classic kind of fish out of water where someone suddenly gets superpowers, and it's constantly different for me because, I mean, when you're writing superhero stuff, there's always the, like, you want to be clever and figure out how to use the powers in new ways, but with Erica, it's two-sided because I also want to figure out literally, like, how would someone who is an artist and, like, for most part, like, a pacifist, like, and not someone who's, like, a brawler, use these powers beyond just zapping people in the face, you know what I mean? There's plenty of that, but underneath that, we see a lot more of her now starting to come into her own and use her own sensibilities to apply, I guess, her extra normal abilities in a way that's true to her. Mm-hmm. And that's a big part of her giving herself a costume. Like, the funny moment where Solar looks at her and goes, "What did you do?" And she's like, "I abandoned your terrible fashion sensibilities." Like, the joke that she can reform the costume in any way. And she's like, "Why would I stick bright red if I could do that?" And he's like, "Well, fair." So.
Well, very cool. Well, Solar is a great book, too. I want to touch on White Suits before I let you go real quickly. Do you want to tell people a little bit about the White Suits?
So White Suits is a action crime comic I did with Dark Horse that was, and clearly my favorite thing about comics is getting to work with collaborators. And I've been so fortunate that all the collaborators I work with are insanely talented. And Toby Cypress, who drew and colored the White Suits, is no exception. He's a really energetic, crazy, interpretive artist. And coming into it, I said to him, I'm like, "Toby, this is not Frank Barbieri telling you what to draw. This is me working with you so you can do what you do because you're such a unique voice." And he honestly floored me with it. But anyhow, it's told all in black and white and red, very visual striking. It's about a group of killers called the White Suits who were active in 80s Cold War Russia, kind of disrupting the crime scene, and then they disappeared, and now they've resurfaced in America. And our two leads, one of them was a member of the White Suits who has amnesia, and all he remembers is these kind of killers in white suits, and then one shooting him in the head and forgetting that's what caused him to forget. And then an FBI agent named Sarah Anderson, who's investigating the White Suits because she believes that they killed her father through kind of some information she's been digging. And it's definitely a mystery that has a very clear payoff in issue 4 that kind of reveals what the real concept is about, so you'll have to read it to find out, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And again, it was a story that started with a lot of style and gradually grew into this kind of big, crazy narrative that I'm really happy with, and happy with the way we approached it. Because as I said, it was a book I put together actually with a completely different artist, but still had that kind of white and black and red style.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought to Dark Horse when I was completely unknown. I sent it in as like a blind submission. And my editor, Chris Warner, actually saw it and was really into it and started talking to me. And we talked for about a year before anything happened. And finally, he's like, listen, I mean, this was like probably 3 years ago. So Dark Horse and the industry in a whole was in a very different position. They weren't really doing new creator-owned work, especially with unknowns. And, but it was right when they had just launched Dark Horse Presents again. Which, funny enough, just launched with a new volume. So Chris came to me and said, hey, we can't do the series right now, but how would you feel about doing shorts in the world of the series in Dark Horse Presents? And at this point, I hadn't published any comics other than self-publishing, so I was like floored. I'm like, wow, that's amazing. I'd love to do that. And in doing those three shorts, we went through three different artists, thankfully settling on Toby, but it really helped me think about the scope of the book and the world as the shorts take place outside of the main narrative, but add to it. And the trade comes out in November, and it has the shorts in there. And there's some stuff in the book that calls directly back to the shorts that I think people who have no idea the shorts existed kind of missed. So I'm really excited to have it all in one package. I saw the final design, too. Dark Horse did a beautiful job designing the interior. Like I said, Toby's art is second to none, so I'm really, really proud to have that all together. Because I feel like it's a book a lot of people missed in magazine form.
Mm-hmm.
And the fans, but Toby did such striking, beautiful covers. I'm glad to have them all in one place. And like I said, I couldn't be more proud. It was really a book that grew for me. Like I said, I wanted to do something very almost like crimey and stylized, but play into a lot of the things I like about, again, the crime genre and like mystery, and really kind of build this visually striking world based around these iconic characters who, again, happen to be the bad guys, so to speak, but we learn a lot about them by the end. And yeah, it's another book that has a universe behind it that hopefully we can revisit one day.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Well, you're a busy guy.
trying to be.
Well, now, the only way I figured to keep up with all the stuff that you do, because you work for so many different companies, you happen to have a really nice website. Do you want to give people your web address so people can kind of follow you and see what you're up to?
Oh, sure. It's atlasincognita.com. I know that maybe sounds weird out loud, but that is where you will find me. I try to keep my Tumblr very active, too, which is FJBarb, my initials, .tumblr.com. And then my Twitter is also Atlas Incognita. I Twitter a lot. But if you have a transcription, you can write Atlasincognita. Mm-hmm. And again, that goes back to one of my own viewpoints about self-publishing. I would self-publish under Atlas Incognita because I feel like creative work is a way to kind of map the unknown, map the unconscious. And that's where that phrase came from. I try to keep people appraised. It's hard to keep up, but I'm having that a lot behind me, though, as much as weird as that sounds, just because I feel like so much is now going to be finally in trade that people will be able to pick it up. And I think the same day as White Suit, Solar Volume 1 comes out as well, which we call Nuclear Family, which I'm happy with.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the street date on issue 5, but issue 5, we have Jonathan Lau, who drew the second half of issue 4, is now a regular series artist. He's been doing amazing work. I liked what he had done on Codename Action, but he has just totally wowed me.
Very cool. Well, Frank, I wish you a lot more continued success, and hopefully we'll see your name on television, we'll see your name on comics, who knows where we'll see your name next.
Hopefully only good places. So we'll
that's
that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, much obliged. Thank you so much.
Well, good talking with you.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
Now at MajorSpoilers.com.
And that's it for this episode. We're getting closer to episode 150, so look for something special to happen during that episode. But until then, keep reading your comics.